Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first of hopefully many fortnightly Spark podcasts. I'm your lovely host, Matt Ravenhall. And with me, I've got Ben.
Ben. Ben. Let's go with that name.
Yeah, let's go with that name today. And over to his right, I've got our lovely resident non-scientist, Isaac. That's your name.
Yes, that's me.
Hello. Yep. Hello. How are you all?
All right.
It's a bit hot in here.
It is a bit, yeah, I was going to say, you know, feeling a bit hot, but quite good, which is, it's nice because it's usually cold at the moment.
Well, it's cold outside. And
it is January.
It is to be expected. It's snow, and we haven't even talked about any science yet. But that leads us nicely into, well done, guys, into our first little segment here, which is global warming and the ozone layer. Now, do you guys remember a thing called the hole in the ozone layer?
I do remember that thing.
Have you heard about it since much? Because I haven't really heard about it much since, like, geography, GCSE.
Well, I don't think... I was thinking about this. I know about ozone layer, but it never seems to be in the news very much anymore. I don't know.
It's stopped being such a big issue, because the main thing was all the CFCs that were coming out, deodorants and fridges and things.
You kind of fixed that, like, quite quickly.
Yeah, government was all like, none of that.
No, it's actually an interesting thing, which I just happen to know. And that, you know, the UN ban on CFCs was the first treaty to have every single country agree to it.
That's quite cool.
Every single. Now, you can contrast that with global warming. All right. Like, ozone, cleared that up straight away.
Yeah.
Found out, whatever. Global warming, like, what the hell, world?
I think global warming's just such a vastly more complex issue, I suppose. But are the two, like, interrelated? I mean, I'm the non-scientist here, so I need you to explain what I always thought global warming and ozone layer, because I thought the ozone layer was what absorbed the sun's rays, right?
Yeah, well, it's and that's what causes. There's a lot to it. If we start on ozone, do you want to take this, chemist?
I'll take this. Ozone's a fun and interesting chemical, because we kind of need lots of it in the stratosphere. The more of that, kind of the better.
Where's the stratosphere?
The stratosphere is, I think it's 10 kilometers plus.
I'm going to say 20 to 30.
20 to 30? Well,
from my notes.
It does actually vary according to your longitude.
Chemistry.
Yeah, boom. But
that's all right.
Yeah, we need some ozone in the stratosphere, because that's brilliant, because it's all like UV rays. I'll absorb them.
None of that.
Yeah, and it reduces the cancer risk and actually lets our molecules stay as things. So it's kind of linked to global warming, because UV rays do warm things up. But
yeah, that's where I was going.
But it's caused by different things. It's caused by different chemicals that cause the kind of reductions in it.
And it's obviously not just in the stratosphere either.
Yeah, there's some. Well, there's probably some in the thermosphere and mesosphere, but I don't care about them. But there's troposphere, which is down here.
Yeah,
there's a little bit, and that's one of the worst kind of health issues.
The ozone layer, I always imagined it when I was younger as being like literally like a layer of black or something. It just happens to have a higher level of ozone in it, basically. Yeah.
It's because it's more stable up there, because it's colder and chemicals and things.
It's basically three oxygen.
It's three oxygen molecules. It's oxygen prime, basically.
What does that mean?
Well, right. The element that causes aging is oxygen, obviously. Like, it just makes our genes go all saggy and horrible and causes our skin...
You don't want saggy genes.
No, we don't want those. We want nice, torn, strong genes.
Continue. It
makes basically us all get saggy and old and horrible.
Okay.
And there's actually quite a cool thing where they... Because it's all superoxides and stuff in the blood. Mm. We don't like oxygen. Oxygen makes us die.
Oxygen
will kill us. That's what kills us, is oxygen.
The problem is, because this is basically oxidative stress, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's essentially that you've got your mitochondria there, and basically whenever they make...
Got that. That's
a little bit in your cell.
Yeah.
Whenever that makes energy, it also makes horrible...
Superoxides.
Which are basically just oxygen atoms or whatever, which want to mess stuff up. And you can't really get away from that, you know. I mean, everything needs energy, as far as I know. I'm probably wrong. There's probably
there's a drug. I think it was based on manganese, which they've tested on rats, and it basically takes up all those oxides and stuff, and increases their lifespan by 50%. One of our lecturers mentioned it really fleetingly, right at the end of the lecture course. It was really
don't tell anyone.
But anyway, oxygen makes us die.
Okay.
Ozone is like supercharged oxygen.
Yes.
So it makes us die worse.
Okay, because it's not as stable. So you've got O2, that's all right. Unless, isn't it that UV hits it, makes it into ozone?
That's what I read on Wikipedia.
UV hits ozone and then it kind of breaks up and then from that it reforms ozone somewhat.
Okay.
It's quite complex systems.
And obviously this links in nicely with a nice bit of research which has just been going on in chemistry.
That it does.
About iodine's role. Above the seas, above warm seas, far away from everywhere else, it basically messes stuff up. That's the crux of it. You can read that online. There'll be a link somewhere.
And you've written an article about it as well, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
In Naus News.
I don't know how you pronounce it, but I think it's supposed to rhyme with ooze.
News.
There we go.
Because it's all
we're advertising them. No, you can read about it in Spark.
Spark as well.
Other student newspapers are available.
There's other better science outlets are available.
Or just the front page of the university website, I believe. It's on the news section.
It's in the press release section. But that's good. But it's also involved. I mean, you know how China's got a lot of pollution going on.
We hear of ozone, isn't it? Yeah.
Not mainly, but ozone's there. Help it out.
They love burning coal. they love it. They can't get enough of it. And there's all these like organic molecules floating around. And if that gets
what's an organic molecule for the
an organic molecule
me run, not for me
something like loosely speaking something that contains carbon and the carbon
that's organic though huh? Non-organic doesn't contain carbon.
You said inorganic. I said organic.
Let's start again.
Okay, right. So basically, China loves burning coal.
Yes.
And this releases, like, unburnt hydrocarbons into the air.
Okay, they're made of hydrogen and carbon.
So they're organic.
They're organic compounds.
Okay, we're getting this. We're getting this.
Organic ones contain carbon and hydrogen as a general rule of thumb.
Right.
And that basically generates oxygen with ozone with loads of really complex reactions.
Okay.
And so... yeah, they cause ozone levels to increase. That's a bad thing. Tropospheric ozone levels to increase.
So that's the lower ones.
Yeah, that's stuff we might breathe in. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not nice. No. So that's ozone.
Yeah.
But what about global warming? I mean, there's been a lot of inertia with politicians about trying to sort this out. Maybe caused by the fact, that one of the major parties in like the world's only superpower, the Republicans,
doesn't believe in it.
Don't believe it. Exactly. I mean, recently they've been talking about the idea of it being a hoax, which is brilliant. The idea that scientists can agree on anything, and they're enough to do that. But isn't it the case as well that was it one of the candidates didn't say it was a hoax, but said that it was unsettled, and they got like.
Are we talking about the comedy candidate?
Romney? I don't know.
Yeah, Mitt Romney, the comedy candidate.
he did win their little...
I always think that's interesting. So he said it's not quite settled, all that sort of thing. That's basically what they say instead of all out saying, I don't care about global warming. They try and come out as being quite like scientific and stuff like, oh yeah, you know, it's all debated and they, you know, you've got to have a balanced viewpoint. And it's basically a very kind of wishy-washy liberal way of saying, of covering up your true sort of... agenda in that sense,
which I think is kind of a bit it doesn't make any sense, because if you've got a scientist and that's his entire life has been studying this and then you just think, right, we need someone from the other side, and you get a coal miner from Tennessee.
an oil man.
I seriously, there was this thing on like Fox News, like obviously it's the worst.
We're showing our political bias,
but people watch it, and they had a scientist who was like, yeah, this is actually a really big problem. And then they had like loads of, they had some guy who just turned up wearing a suit who claimed
like the Yes Men
pretty much. And he claimed that he kind of knew what he was talking about, but he obviously didn't.
I think they also have a habit of getting weathermen who tend to disagree with it, not realizing that weather, which is a very short term thing,
not
climate, and
climate, which is long term. That's basic geography. Exactly. I did that for GCSE. Yeah. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
For marks.
Not many people. That's one of the things which people often you'll often hear people saying, because it's snowing outside right now, for example, and say, oh, global warming, it's snowing outside. But, I mean, if you just put it in the context, for example, if you all remember Australia, that country, the other side of the south.
Yeah.
Yeah, the south one, the big one where we shipped all the...
Yeah, where we put our prisoners.
Prisoners. Well, they've just had one of the largest droughts, I don't know, ever.
Yeah.
And are those wildfires still going?
Probably. Wildfires.
Yeah.
There's always a wildfire somewhere.
And if you contrast that, they're not all going over there saying, "Oh, now there's a wildfire. We should definitely recycle."
I think it's a somewhat selective view of evidence. Yeah. I think is what you're trying to say. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, and it's also, and you also find people who claim the idea that it stopped like 16 years ago, and that's a lot to do with, or the years changed. Because it's a case of picking data points where the statistics mess up.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you take it over a longer period of time, you can see...
I think this is somewhere where you could help, because I was talking to someone who is a historian, so not a scientist, but was saying that we're in an interglacial stage or something like that. And they were going on about glacial stages, and I kind of knew that what they were saying couldn't be correct, because
that's the problem with these guys. If just on the small point you're making there, the idea that, because climate science is a massive field, and you need teams, like armies of people, to understand everything, like from atmospheric and whatever, and it's a very easy field to be able to just say, oh, but I heard this one thing, and you've never heard of it before, and it's also a lot to do with how misinformation for it spreads a lot faster than the truth or whatever.
A bit like with evolution and stuff as well, saying, oh, well, what about this?
There's a lot of ways of saying it's wrong, which, I don't think I've heard the interglacial one before. I've heard claims of, how it's just a natural progression, and there was apparently like a medieval warm period.
I think that's basically what they were trying to get at.
Is that what they're trying to say? Because that's one which comes up a lot. And they say, oh, look, there were cases where people... there were these texts where people were, dancing around and it was really hot or something from the medieval time. And what you find is you look at the data and that was a very Europe-centric thing. Mm. Everywhere else, massively lower. And it goes back to how the weather systems and climate systems are massively in flux. And you will get these strange occasions where there's like the Thames freezes over or something.
Yeah.
But you've got to look at the long period of time and... That's that.
Basically. There's an interesting little statistic that I've just remembered, and actually have just remembered because I don't have a smartphone on me. if you look at like ice core records, back in like pre-industrial revolution, CO2 levels were 200 parts per million.
Okay, and is that small?
Now it's 380 and still rising.
Okay,
this is like a mass extinction event kind of going on.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's not a great thing. On quick little mass extinction events, no one seems to realise there have been about, six, I think, events where basically 95% or something of everything on the planet has died. Usually the big stuff, like dinosaurs or humans. So
watch out, guys.
I'm placing a bet on that one. Completely lost my track. You're not saying anything.
No, well, on that note, I find that quite interesting. So there was an article recently about they think one of the main reasons dinosaurs died out was because it all got frozen or whatever, and they
there are lots of theories which go around there. Yeah. I mean, obviously the big one is the asteroid thing, because iridium layer and all that, because iridium can only really be found in asteroids, and it's found this layer underground everywhere. You do archaeology, right?
We don't really look at dinosaurs, but no. And I personally as well don't go further back than 200 years. So,
okay.
I can't really help there.
Completely out of my field now. asteroid probably seems to be the biggest thing, but obviously there are always lots of different ideas which are out there.
Hmm.
But it's not to say that it's the same with global warming, because there's a massive consensus there.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, bringing on that point, it's actually quite interesting when you list down the organisations which support, accept or deny global warming.
Mm.
The ones which accept are things like the Royal Society or the Royal Institute or whatever, the science bodies.
Yeah.
Ones against are stuff like Shell was at
Yeah. Like, and the Conservative Institute of Christian Science or whatever, yeah, you know,
yeah,
just...
Yeah.
No, it goes down to this thing that on science, politics can really get in the way.
Yeah.
And it's quite irritating when... Because this is a thing that affects all of us, you know, yeah, and not even just our species. And yet, people are letting money control what they yeah say and report.
I think it's also partly because it's a very long-term issue.
Yeah.
And it's not something that can be... that will happen, like, within 2 years, within, you know, an electoral term,
yeah,
or be sold within that amount of time. You need, you know...
Long-term planning.
You need, yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's something which politics, at least in this country, doesn't really tend to do.
I mean, that can be, like, slightly dodgy territory, because I think it was... Yeah. Is it James Lovelock, the one who came out of, like, the Gaia theory? And, yeah, and, you know, he's very into all this stuff. Mm. And
that's basically the idea that the world can be seen as a living organism, and we're yeah all parts of yeah
yeah. And I think he was quite influential in sort of like climate geography and stuff like that. And he basically called for the suspension of democracy to yeah sort out climate change, yeah, which, you know, on the face of it can seem correct, but, you know, then, you know, do you trust like one or two people to sort it out? You know, of yeah course not. So, but you can get on slightly like dodgy ground. You shouldn't sort of just blame politics. I think money's a big part of it, isn't it? And sort of established interests. And how do you go about, you know, with long term planning? Mm. And
And obviously, you also have an issue as well if the public doesn't also accept the science.
Mm.
And this gets you know heated up a lot in especially in America, where, like we say before, the Republicans basically run on that platform because there's a large body of people who vote that way. If you found that everyone was you know wanting to recycle and
yeah
and carbon tax or whatever the options are, I don't know, let's not go into the yeah economics or whatever, but you'd find that because it would all change on the higher up level.
The stats actually show that in America over the last 10 years or so, the number of people who believe that climate change is happening has dropped.
Okay.
So it's not even, you can't even be like optimistic about it. And
do you know if it was a big drop or, because you get loads of these statistics out.
You know, you always have like grey areas for people who are like, I'm not sure or yeah very strongly agree with
yeah
it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the drop was between those levels and it dropped, I think, pretty significant. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Do we know why then there's a public not being on the side of
Fox
science,
News, I imagine.
It can't be all down to Fox News.
I think Fox News' demographic is almost exclusively over 50.
Mm, yeah.
So,
and college students laughing.
Yeah. I imagine it's probably just... It's dropped out of this kind of public consciousness.
Has it? Okay.
Well, I think people hear yeah global warming and they just kind of shrug and they're like...
There's a recession on, you know, that's kind of...
People feel yeah powerless.
Short-term issues.
Companies are going to make money by burning oil to do all the industrial processes.
Mm.
They're not. No one wants to invest all the money in solar technology.
I say, well, I
science is there for that. It's
yeah
down.
No, I see. But I see the option as being why are businesses not wanting to push for renewables and push for nuclear and just saying, hey, look how great we are for the planet. I mean, they're already doing. I mean, for example, my loo roll this morning, I was looking at it 100% recycled, and I thought, oh, that's something you wouldn't have really seen like,
yeah
50 years ago. And if you're doing more of that kind of thing, and it's more of a case of, you know, being green or whatever, and I'm doing the inverted commas sign, but no one can see it.
You're on the radio.
Exactly, yeah. There's a webcam, but it's not on. If it became more of a case of that kind of stuff sold, maybe more would happen. I shrugged when I was saying that. I'm doing it again. But it is good to see. I mean, especially in contrast with the last, I can't remember what it's called. They have these G20 kind of like things with the global science, and they all the politicians meet up
yes
and say what they're going to do. Last one was just awful. It just plodded along and nothing really happened.
But was that in like Denmark or something?
I don't even know. That's the thing. It was kind of a side note on the news.
Mm.
And
meanwhile,
it's kind of like Mali was until recently. I mean, that's been happening since a year ago.
Mm.
It's
a long term thing. Yeah,
but it is good to see that Obama has in his inaugural speech. I can speak. Has actually put words forward, and he's kind of done that before. Let's be honest. I mean, we all remember I'm going to shut Guantanamo Bay, and then
oh yeah.
Didn't because I mean, present. He's present, but he doesn't have
all the power.
All the power.
Isn't he really slowed down by Congress or something?
Yeah.
It's very much a fight between the two.
But still, it's good to have a president who wants that as opposed to, say, a president who doesn't care at all, you know. Yeah. Some progress maybe can be expected.
And I think it also does show how... I mean, he can't say that if the majority of the public was against what he was saying. And it must show there's perhaps a shift there.
Well, he mentioned, like, back in... Before the... You know, in the election speeches and debates, he mentioned he was going to invest in solar power.
So
presumably
there's subsidies and stuff now, isn't there? Because we did have that here, and then they realised they didn't have any money left because they were giving everyone money for solar panels. But, so is that happening again?
I don't know if that's happening, but it should. But here, solar power's a bit of a kind of dud because how much sun do we get? I mean, seriously. Like, actually think about how much sun we get. In America, they've got the Mojave Desert and stuff.
Mm.
They've actually got a massive plane of land.
Pretty big place, yeah.
I mean, that's the case when it comes to a lot of these renewable energies. Everyone likes to think of the idea that we can definitely use them. But like you say, you need sun, you need wind, you need wave or whatever. And it's very much a case of having a lot of options there and a lot of, and ideally backing it up against nuclear. And a lot of people are against that as well. I mean, especially given the tide of Fukushima.
Yeah,
is that what
I think so, yeah.
But also, the other thing about nuclear that I read was that it takes a while to get them online, doesn't it? A nuclear power plant.
Well, it's the same with building any big power station.
But surely, you know, I would have thought, say, wind turbines were... I know they don't do anywhere near as much as nuclear.
I don't know the specifics, but I know there's a lot of back and forth saying, you know, wind turbines are and they aren't, and it's you get a lot of
but nuclear power, even like if we're completely utopian and say, right, we're just going to put up loads of plants and sort this out,
it'd definitely take a while.
It'd take a while, and by then it could be like not too late as such, but certainly would be much further down the road if it takes like 10 years or something.
That's what I mean. It's a case of not just relying on one source.
But surely now is when we want to be investing in infrastructure and things.
We've
got a growing population, we need to be kind of investing in water and power and things.
Do you hear actually, I'll say this morning, but it won't be this morning when people are listening to this.
Earlier in the week.
Early in the week, exactly. David Attenborough has been talking about world population and says basically we need to limit it.
Oh, he said that a lot
but he
of
said
times,
he's,
yeah.
He's on the board, he's some patron of something which is like this. I mean, he said voluntary limit, I should say. Yeah. Like telling people, you know, that's
maybe.
Let's use a bit more
you don't need 11 children.
Have you considered 10?
No, but so that's that.
But it's less the size of a population as such, and more, you know, if you compare, say, how much an American consumer uses
there has been that famous statistic out saying that if we all ate like Americans, we'd need 10 planets or something. Is it?
Yeah.
And you can look at it from the side of saying, you know, we need a smaller population, or you can say we need to use food sources better.
Is,
and that's where things like GEM and etc. come out.
It's an embarrassing fact that there is enough food produced that no one needs starve.
There are ships designed to literally, when grain prices reach a level that they don't want, to literally dump it into the sea. And the ships are designed to do that.
You might need a citation.
that sounds
horrific.
I read it in the newspaper. So, but it
Is this contributing to the half of all food being wasted or something then?
I think a lot.
Was that just dinner plates?
I know that there is enough for everyone, isn't there? And there's
enough
to get like 3,100 calories or something like that.
Which is more than enough. I mean, you need about 2,000 if you're an adult, I believe, an adult male.
It's 2,500 for an average adult male.
Okay.
2,000 for a female.
I was close.
Yeah.
So it's a problem of... It's an inefficiency in distribution, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
that's something as well you can't fix in the short term. Which I'm very political on this side.
It's all very like linked in though, isn't it? But yeah, I mean... it's quite... It makes me feel quite pessimistic about the whole thing, really. But
perhaps we should slowly meander onto our next rough topic and look to the stars.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
It's a company called Planetary Resources.
Okay.
And I was looking at them, and
is this asteroid mining?
I thought it was asteroid mining.
You thought it was,
but it actually goes deeper than that. They've got this.
Hey.
They've got this kind of idea where if we want to basically, if we were like, think adventures on a boat and we were going to another land, like think Vikings.
Okay.
The Vikings would never
just, or Columbus.
Just, hear me out here because this works, right?
Okay.
You'd never think, right, well, we'll load up everything we need for about 5 months onto this boat and then we'll take this boat off. Well, it might sink. It's going to be a lot of effort. And also, if you're going somewhere...
I know we're going across the sea, but I don't want to do any effort. You know what I mean?
No.
No, go on.
When you get across the sea, you'd go to the land that you've reached and you'd live off that. You know, you'd kill whatever animals.
It's like Mars or something.
But their idea is that rather than sending spaceships, loading all the fuel and everything and all the air that they need forever on here
the
from,
air.
You know, like, well, you need to breathe.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm just...
Rather than loading that all on Earth and then sending it into space, load as little as you can.
Yeah.
And get everything else from asteroids.
Okay.
Like water.
Can you get air from asteroids?
You can get water and you can electrolyze that using solar power to oxygen. And you only need like nitrogen.
I thought you were going to go for a completely different direction there. What were you going to say? We should terraform Mars first, okay? Then go there,
the giant,
because then it'll be fine.
That would make sense.
Yeah, and I thought that. I mean, because let's think about asteroid mining. It must be quite hard to find an asteroid, land on it. It's quite a job. And what are you going to find there? Water, maybe, but
there's water. There's
a lot of gold,
iridium. Platinum group metals, all the catalysts we need to make drugs that we're running out of.
So asteroid mining is not just going for one particular resource. It's like a transportable group of resources.
Because I thought it was just platinum and gold, I'll be honest.
Well, no, it's all the metals that we need, because like drugs and even like smartphones, they use a lot of indium. And like, I don't like touchscreens because they use indium, which we need for solar panels.
Is that the one that they get from the Congo? And it's causing a lot of issues. The Democratic, that one?
The one that's name keeps changing.
Yeah. I think that's, and that's a cause of a lot of the issues there. But so they can find that on asteroids.
They can find most heavy metals there because, well, that's just what asteroids are.
I almost said like Black Sabbath or something, but I thought I'd avoid the bad joke. Sorry.
just like a CD.
That does actually move slightly on to Curiosity Rover. They play music every day, don't they? They were playing.
Oh, they played
like...
Will I Am or something.
Yeah.
What out into? You can't do that, can you?
I don't know, because I tried to work it out. They've got a playlist, and I don't know if they play it out to like the atmosphere, or they just play it in the lab.
I think we need another lesson here, because I thought you couldn't play music in space because there's a vacuum.
Well, Mars isn't in space.
Yeah, Mars.
Oh.
Mars.
It has its own atmosphere.
I think its atmosphere is only like 0.1 atmosphere.
I think a lot of it's been smashed off by solar winds.
Yeah, so but it has air.
They're the worst winds, aren't they? Let's be honest.
I wouldn't want a solar wind myself. I mean, our solar winds. Let me get. I don't know. There's no physicist here, but let's hope we're right. I mean, your
someone can always
close.
Like message in or something and say.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah in the future.
Know. Yeah. and then we can do a retraction or whatever.
We will correct this. We'll go back and correct this. But isn't it basically, I don't know, isn't it like neutrinos and stuff?
There's neutrinos, there's a load of other particles.
It's basically probably, subatomic particles.
Yeah, it's probably some hot gas in there. I don't know.
So it's like a hot wind, basically.
Hot wind.
There's going to be loads of like UV radiation in there, gamma rays.
Oh,
all the stuff that sees your molecules and things, yeah. Thinks I'm going to destroy those.
So what can you get out of an asteroid?
Let's make a list.
Yes. Go on, I've got my pen.
A laundry list.
Yeah. Well,
shopping list rather.
I don't. Iridium. No, I'm not a spaceologist.
That's a technical term.
Asteroidographer.
Asteroidographer. Oh, while we're on asteroids, there was an interesting paper out recently. Okay, and by interesting I mean crazy. Okay, there's a journalist you may have heard of or you may not have heard of called the Journal of Cosmology, which sounds legitimate, right?
Sounds.
Until you find out it's run by a few people who...
The Association of Homeopathers.
They seem to think that everything was caused by asteroids bringing life to the thing. For example, the paper I'm talking about essentially claimed that there was an asteroid which landed in somewhere or other, and there were these fossilized little creatures on it. Therefore, they came from space.
I always thought that... I didn't think it was fossils, but I always thought that it was like an asteroid hit the Earth with like chemicals or something, and the chemical reactions eventually.
This is abiogenesis in general, like, you know, the origin of life from nothing. And it's not really got a conclusion at the moment.
Well, they you've kind of... They've found nuclear bases in space and amino acids in space.
Yeah.
And
so we know that these kind of things are natural.
Let's clear up nuclear bases. That's not like a power plant or something.
Bits of DNA.
Bits of DNA.
Bits of DNA, amino acids, that kind of stuff.
All the stuff you need.
Stuff you need for proteins and genes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember doing this must have been science. Chemistry with in science, you know, with a different... They always represent that with like a square and then the other thing with like a triangle and then...
Do they?
Yeah, they do. Oh. Like, you know, all the adenosine, thymine...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
So yeah, there are ideas that there may have been those kind of things from space, like the bases from space. Or and there's also the famous Uri Miller experiment where, you know, you get all the early Earth bits.
Like put ammonia and carbon monoxide, I don't know the list.
Spark of lightning or whatever, and you get amino acids forming as well. And obviously, if those things can form naturally, then it's just a case of saying, you know, if we can then find that they form RNA or whatever, or DNA, naturally, you can get the progression up to cells.
Yeah, basically, the molecules that would have kind of self-arranged into things that would replicate and then would dominate.
Yeah.
So if it's only a small proportion of them that would, eventually it would start to take place. But the asteroid thing, kind of, it's got its roots in, let's say, all of our amino acids have a kind of handedness.
Okay, this is more chemistry kind of stuff. Go on.
Basically, if you look at your left hand and your right hand, they're not mirror image. They're mirror images of them, but you can't rotate
over. You can't overlay them. Okay, so that's the handedness.
That's what I mean. Oh, handedness.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, I like that.
And you can have that with molecules as well.
Yeah, with general molecules, but all of our amino acids are, well, roughly, they are like left-handed. Say,
okay,
arbitrarily, we'll say that. But why? There's no real like. Left-handed isn't more stable than right-handed. We can make right-handed
amino acids.
It's just
one of the two.
Yeah. Okay. So we're kind of... The question is, where did this dominance come from?
It kind of reflects the matter-antimatter thing in physics.
Yeah, roughly like
where
that.
Where we're all made of matter, but there's also this thing opposite to it called antimatter. How come we're all made of matter and not antimatter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, so similar kind of thing.
That's interesting. That's almost kind of...
I
can imagine some, like... kind of idiot historian taking that concept and like trying to apply it to like the way that, you know, this society came to dominate that society, or how people, you know, how people came to, you know, came to go to war and that sort of thing. People do that in social sciences. They get like
this is coming from the non-scientist
you know, but you know, like hybridization and stuff in biology or people have brought that into...
How so? How's that in...
Just through, like, cultural mixing and stuff.
They just took the term.
Yes.
That's our term.
That's what they do.
Make your own terms.
But then again, you took handedness. So, I mean, you know, it's give and take,
hands,
isn't it?
That's...
So the asteroid... If all the things on the asteroid had one handedness, that would explain where it all came from. But another study showed that it's probably just statistics.
Now let's go vaguely back to the space again, because I think there have been something like 8 people up, and it tends to cost between 20 and 40 million.
Fair old whack. Yeah.
If you had 20 or 40 million pounds, would you have a little space job?
Well, I'd have to have a lot more than 20 and 40 million pounds to make it like proportional.
Spend all my
like,
money.
As if I was just, you know, as same as going to France or something.
Same as going to France.
Yeah, well, someone like Bill Gates, but it is the same as same as that, isn't it? I don't know. I imagine it being quite boring out there, really.
Yeah, but just you're in
space. Around for a bit.
There's no gravity. That's got to be fun. Try and drink it. Some water. You can't.
Yeah, but you can do that. You can do that in the simulators, can't you?
Yeah,
you
know? True.
But not quite as good though. It's not the same gravity.
No,
there's a slight difference.
Oh, okay. Well,
slight difference.
That,
in
would you pay 20 million quid for that?
No,
slight difference.
Mostly, I imagine you're paying for the view from the room.
Yeah, but. Google if you're Earth. Not good with heights, it's like the ultimate height.
I would imagine.
Like you can't get much further than space.
I think there's a point where you get high enough and your brain just can't comprehend the height.
Wait, and you have a panic attack.
You're like...
Boeing are trying to go into space though, aren't they? They're doing them and SpaceX and Virgin Galaxy. They've got their White Knight little plane thing. So a lot of companies are doing this.
I think there'd have to be an end point, you know. I wouldn't want just want to go to space.
Sure.
I'd like to go to Mars or something.
Would you want to go to Mars though if it was a one way trip? Because that seems more likely.
Not just a one way trip. It's also like takes about 6 months or something stupid to get there.
And they did that. They did that experiment recently where they basically locked people up for 6 months.
It was a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not people up for 6 months in Russia. It was science.
Similar to Mars.
But, and they basically, messed up sleep pattern and stuff.
It was a full year, and they were, like, after 6 months, they were allowed to go out and hop in a little simulation of Mars.
Oh, that's the best really?
Thing. Yeah, they were given a day where they were allowed to go into this.
One day.
Is
it worth it? Is it worth it for that?
It would be worth it if you were actually going to Mars.
Maybe. But for a day, would you go to Mars if it was only for a day?
See,
considering there's nothing there and you'd probably die.
Well, you wouldn't probably die.
No, you'd have a spacesuit, suit on.
Yeah.
I think if you were going to go to Mars, the thing that you should probably do is first send some like little unmanned...
Terraform it first.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Send like an unmanned like bacterial probe there.
Yeah.
Something that will just terraform it for you. Because, you know, lazy.
I mean, there is actually a Dutch company called Mars One who are actually planning to send people to Mars.
To
have a little colony. They're basically going to send like four people and then later on send four more. And I think by like 2033, they're planning to have 20 people there. And they're part funding it by making it a reality TV show. What do you think about that?
Wow.
If it gets money in,
Would you go on?
Of course I'd go on. I'm going to space.
But remember, it's a one-way trip. It's to Mars, and then that's it. Well, you probably do sciencey stuff there, or you'd play golf or whatever they do on the moon. But
I could be like a resident anthropologist or something, just like interviewing people, seeing how it's going.
Put that on your CV, but you wouldn't be able to get a job back on Earth because you wouldn't be able to get there. But you know, I mean, I kind of see the issue there being the fact that if you send a lot of people to Mars and leave them there, I mean. They can't get any help if anything goes wrong.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And what if it turns out one person's a psycho or one person dies or something? And
I imagine if you were sending people to Mars, each one, you'd do a pretty comprehensive psychiatric kind of...
But how can you...
Can't guarantee it, of course.
You can't, exactly, you can't really prepare for being locked into a room for 6 months.
No, that's true.
But then also being on a planet just for four people, knowing that...
I think you could probably get around it by sending a couple hundred...
Well, it's going to take a while to get the facilities there.
Oh, yeah. But
I mean, eventually, let's, you know, have a city or whatever.
But send, you know, get a small colony going. You'll need more than four, maybe 30.
Yeah, well, like I say, they're planning to have 20 in about 30 years or something.
See, what I'm thinking about is, I was thinking about the English and Dutch colonisation of North America, right? Which is not comparable because, of course, there was a huge population there already, but actually it's quite interesting.
Hope that's not the case on Mars.
Hopefully. What's quite interesting there is that it was quite basically random who survived. So there was one colony called Roanoke in North America, which all went wrong because basically the indigenous population kicked them out.
Okay.
And in Jamestown, on the other hand, there was a different political situation and they were able to sort of latch onto that and do all right. And eventually Jamestown, of course, is still there today. Mars is obviously different because there's no one there.
So it'd be more about interaction between the people.
Yeah, and you'd really need to make sure that... Because the people... If there was no Native Americans in Chesapeake, the people who went there, the English, would have died.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, because they just weren't...
prepared at all.
Prepared for the environment and
all that. But I
suppose
they'd be prepared if you send them to
Mars. That's a big difference. It's kind of... It's quite interesting. That terraforming thing, I think that'd need to happen.
Let's do that.
Let's put that on the list. But also as well, I'd probably wait a couple of hundred years because you can't really be ambitious if you go to Mars. Like you can, it's ambitious to go there, but once you're there, what can
not
you do?
Do?
You can't be like mayor or you know or right. You know, you're there. Then that's the end of your life, basically.
I mean,
yeah, but you're living out on Mars. You are founding a new.
But you're doing nothing. You're just maybe like growing a few plants. You can't do anything particularly once you're there.
You're laying down the cornerstones for a new civilization.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there's a lot. I mean, you can also. There's only so much exploring you can do with a robot, for example. Imagine exploring Mars as a person walking around in a spacesuit or whatever. It's got a lot to it rather than
I think there was a statistic somewhere. It was like, I'm probably making this up, like five minutes as a person on a planet is worth like 6 months of a robot being there or something stupid like that.
Okay. Really?
Probably a massive exaggeration, but
yeah, probably. But you know, yeah.
I'd want to be 65 or something. I'd want to
ask Buzz Aldrin, who's really old, and to ask if he'd do it, and he said, "Yeah, but his wife wouldn't be happy."
Oh, right, okay, yeah, that's a problem, isn't it? Yeah, your family and friends down on Earth, but you know, I'd want to have had an Earth life and then go do a Mars life.
Finish it off on Mars.
Yeah.
The afterlife.
It'd just be a cemetery if everyone does that, though. It'll be an old people's home on Mars.
That'd be kind of... That's certainly preferable to just... But old people's homes here. Really,
whoa,
isn't it?
What are you saying?
Well, no, I mean they got
save space.
They're quite depressing places, aren't they? Compared to Mars,
depends what the old people are like inside. Well, if they're nice, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, but compared to Mars,
yeah.
Mars is quite depressing. It's just like a desert that goes on
a red desert
forever. It's like it. It's not even as exciting as Venus. Venus is the planet that's exciting.
You couldn't live on Venus at all.
No
you
one
would
could.
Literally
no.
Die.
They sent a space probe there and it dissolved within 20 minutes. Well, that's like, they've got, I think they've got one photo which they managed to send and then they just stopped getting messages.
One
like,
photo.
How much did it cost them to send that?
Oh, way too much.
Couldn't they have worked that already though? Not be funny.
Yeah, I'm
going to
say, what
known.
If they do that with the Mars people? They get them there and then suddenly they dissolve or something.
That's,
but let's say there is, because it kind of links back into the American thing, because obviously what happened with America is they had a massive revolution and they were no longer attached to Britain. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you send a load of Americans and Russians over there. And for example, if you think of the International Space Station, because obviously part of that is Russian territory, part of it's American territory. So they've still got the country divide. If you send them to Mars, where they're basically all on their own, apart from themselves, are you still going to have those divides? Are you going to end up with a situation where maybe you have, you know, its own little, the colony forms its own identity and it revolts, as it were.
You might still have some like national divides, but I think it wouldn't just be a replica. It'd definitely be very different because that is just the way history works. Like things are always.
You'd probably get like, wouldn't surprise me if there was a war over that. I mean, if you have say a couple of thousand people on Mars. Some of them will say, right, we need to keep our national identities and kind of stick with it. The others will say, right, that we're on Mars, we've got to work together, we can't have this, we've got to get rid of it. You could kind of see some kind of revolution along that happening. But
it did take them 300 years for the American Revolution to happen, though. So, that's true.
Yeah, I'm not saying it'll be...
Yeah.
They need to terraform the place, remember?
everyone lands and just, Viva la Revolution!
I reckon... Because it'd obviously be corporations behind the colonization.
Well, that's the point, actually.
Be like mercantile capitalism rather than...
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, because if it used to be about... I mean, the thing that fueled the space race before was essentially just America wanting to one-up Russia.
Cold War,
And that was everything behind it. That was the political drive that needed it. It wasn't a case necessarily of saying, we need to go to space because we can and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was... And we don't really have that as much now because... The only superpower, like we say, America, and they've not known to fight to like race gun. But then again, all the spaces from
China started its space program.
India has as well, I think. Yeah. Although I don't know how successful it is. I think there might even be like a Philippinian.
Oh, and we should probably mention the highly successful North Korean space program.
They have got a satellite up.
Remember?
One of the big places for space programs is Kazakhstan because they have all the old Soviet. It was all based there, so
there is still a thing, but I don't think it's anything like the Cold War was. No. Whereas if you compare, coming at from a kind of business side of things, where you've maybe got SpaceX wanting to beat Virgin, whatever, maybe you've got the same kind of. I mean, you haven't got a whole country behind it, but you've got a whole company behind it.
A race for profit, rather than
even doing it for the glory. Because imagine being like the guy who sent the first capsule up to wherever.
Picture the advertising.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like, imagine having, like, being, like, getting to Mars and just putting a logo that says Shell on it. Boom.
Oh, no. So do you think instead of, say they get to Mars, say it's behind companies, are you then going to have, you know, the Tesco one and they're all eating their horse?
Tescoville.
And you've got the Sainsbury's
horse, like
one.
Sneaky.
So instead of having, that'd be very strange, I think.
Horses on Mars.
Horses are Mars.
Would they keep the monetary system up there?
Who knows? It'd be a brilliant experiment.
Mm.
Going back to the science. Yeah. And of course, I mean, if we also take the fact, because obviously NASA wasn't just about space. It's also about all the technology which developed along the side of the way. I mean, there's stuff like
Velcro.
Wheelchairs. Well,
is Velcro NASA?
Velcro's the big one.
Velcro's NASA.
Well done, NASA. Yeah.
It's things like, I mean,
Teflon linings as well.
There we go. You've found a list somewhere online. <haven't you? laughs>
No, it's just NASA produces loads of stuff that people... Because people say, oh, why should we bother going to space? It's just a big sink for money.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't realise that that money's going into the economy. Yeah. It's not like someone just gets £10 million and thinks, right, so I'm going to throw this away.
Space.
Yeah. You're giving it to people who are building spaceships.
Or even researching.
Yeah.
And they've got a website to maintain, so they've got to pay that guy.
Exactly.
So people are getting paid, you know, consumer. Yeah. That's...
Although actually, on the side, while we're talking about that, they do have a bunch of e-books which you can download for free, I believe. So that's they're about... throwing money away there, so you might as well download them.
What are e-books about?
Space. They're also, did you say they were talking, I mean, I was talking to you earlier, and there was something about an exoskeleton as well that's coming from NASA.
Basically, one of the big problems with going into space is obviously there's gravity, but there's zero gravity, you know, zero in inverted commas gravity.
Okay.
Things are floating around and stuff. And the problem with humans is we need gravity because it gives our muscles something to work against.
Yeah.
So otherwise
they waste away, basically.
Yeah, otherwise they
waste
away. So one of the big problems for NASA and things like that is if we're putting humans into zero gravity for a long period of time, we need to work some way out of getting their muscles to not atrophy. And there's some videos of people like running with weights on for ages at a time.
Which is quite an inefficient way of doing it,
well,
I suppose.
It doesn't really work. There's still the problem. People still, they come back to space and they're still weak and they fall out and stuff.
Yeah,
just stalls it, maybe.
So what NASA designed was they worked on this kind of exoskeleton that works on all... It basically grabs your legs. And I think there's models that could do your arms as well. So when you're moving your limbs...
You've got resistance.
Yeah, it provides a kind of simulated gravity, so your muscles don't atrophy. And a cool little side shot of it is that the technology works in reverse. So the motors that inhibit movement can also allow it. So you've got kind of paraplegics, or people who've never walked before, putting these on and being able to take steps.
Yeah.
You know, because they can presumably use some muscle input, put some muscle input in, but not enough to hold themselves up. But this...
And this is quite interesting, because this comes onto the whole idea of the human enhancement kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember that quite recently as well, there was a thing with a robotic arm, which some woman was able to use combined with a mind. You know,
she had a robotic chip in her brain and she could remote control her hand.
Yeah, and it basically worked almost exactly like a normal human hand worked in terms of, you know, speed and blah, blah, blah. And so that's basically, let's be honest, that's one step to bionics. And
one step to Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same. Yeah.
Well, there's that guy who runs the Cyborg Foundation who... Right. He's colorblind. They invented like this little, in 2004 or something, they invented this little eyeglass thing that attaches to his head, and it enables him to hear color. I don't know how it works really, but it enables him to hear color, and he's done even like sound portraits of people like Prince Charles and stuff. But in the process of all this, because he had it on for a good few years, his brain tissue has adjusted.
Okay.
So he's literally changed his biology.
Do find that when you have people who are blind or deaf or something, you find that the areas of their brain which are to do with seeing or hearing find themselves with different functions, because there is a lot of plasticity in terms of, especially when you're young.
Yeah.
And that kind of underpins language.
And because his brain tissue has changed, he was able to argue that it's literally part of him, so in his passport photo, he wears it.
He can include it.
He can include it, yeah.
Even though it covers your eyes, I suppose.
Covers one of your eyes.
It's quite similar to the... Because obviously this sounds like the Google eyeglass kind of thing, but more attached. And I think there was a case quite recently in France where a guy had a kind of glasses thing fixed to his head.
It was soldered to his skull.
And it was assaulted, wasn't it?
I think he was in a McDonald's.
Yeah.
And someone felt very uncomfortable with this weird...
Because it records, basically. You look at it and it records... While he's doing it, because I think he was testing it out for, if not Google, someone else.
He was doing
the army, maybe.
Because it's a prototype, so they needed to know exactly where it was on his body, and so that's why it was soldered to his face, not just his face, to his skull. And some people tried to remove it, and they weren't listening
very well.
Yeah, I think there was a language barrier as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not...
It was, I think it was an American in France, or was it an English person?
It's not often you have to use the phrase "I'm sorry, this is soldered to my skull."
Yeah. No, that's not in my phrase, but I'll be honest.
So that's awful. Yeah, it'd be like ripping off someone's nose or something. Or...
Yeah,
And obviously because, like we say, it records, and but I think it might be the case that it only records when it's damaged or something. So usually it's recording and then it chucks it away. Because I think it needs to process or whatever. So they managed to get stills of the people who'd done it.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that's your first incident. I think it was put as the first incident of like cyborg discrimination or something. But I mean, when we come on to cyborgs and stuff, it's essentially the definition is basically just someone who is part machine, part person, or whatever. And usually, the case of enhancing their well-being. So, if you come down to it, things like pacemakers and Isaac points to his glasses.
Not my glasses. I don't wear glasses.
Well, my glasses.
Glasses in general, I suppose. Yes.
Yeah. Arguably, well, even a watch.
I'd be a watch, yeah, because these are mechanical things which are essentially enhancing, more so the watch than the glasses, I'd say, yeah. I think, because that's adding a function which you don't normally have.
Yeah, but glasses enhance your something yeah. you've already got,
but it's,
whereas
it's
watch
to a normal kind
watch
of standard.
Enhances your timekeeping.
Yeah, but that's yeah. not like biologically, yeah. like, whereas, you know, your eyes are, so that's enhancement, yeah. isn't it?
So essentially we've already had, I mean, every time someone's been called a Specky Four Eyes or something, that's also cyborg discrimination. So
I'd love it if some kid at school just went, actually, I'm a cyborg.
Yeah, and that would not help him out. But no, it's also, I mean, it's not just mechanical things that you can do enhance as well. I mean, obviously, there's also also smart drugs and stuff. Like, I think the big one around was Modafinil or something. Is that the one? I don't know.
But is that the one students were taking?
I think it might be. The one that can keep you up for 20, 30 hours and you can write an essay or something. But then it turns out the essay's terrible or something. I can't remember.
You're like tripping and stuff.
But that's more to do with like cognitive enhancement drugs. Yeah. And that's to do with like wanting to increase your learning or your memory or your attention or something.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes in, you can kind of look at that in two ways. Like you can enhance what's already in your brain. Like how your brain processes learning or memory. The problem is though, we only know so much and you can end up screwing things up. And the other one is to basically just take away things which are getting in the way of your learning. So, for example, you could consider something like an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety drug as being a cognitive enhancer, because you're getting rid of the stress or the worry or the depression, which is getting in the way of you learning. So so when we talk about human enhancement, it's a very broad and open thing. So it's not just a case of exoskeleton and mechanics. It's also a case of maybe putting something inside you which changes. So what I ask is, if you had to have, if you could enhance yourself in some way, what would you do? And in whatever way, in a vague way, would you? I mean, the typical ones you get from people are like invisibility or flying, but I'm not sure we could do that. Maybe bionic legs.
Yeah, I was going to say. Presumably, we have to have some degree of realism.
Yeah, I think so. Say within the next 50 to 100 years, okay. And then we can kind of go a bit crazy about it. Is there anything you'd?
I think memory would be a big one for me, like being able to say, essentially having photographic memory or having just really, really good memory. Because I can't learn languages. I find it really so. It'd be good to be able to. That would really enhance your experience of a world, wouldn't it? So,
yeah.
But then maybe that would overcome you eventually, and you'd be just like spilling out facts all the time.
True.
Just like, did you know? Blah blah blah. And
I mean, it's the case that if you enhance memory, the what if you remember things that you don't? I mean, aren't there examples of people? And I can't think of anyone to mind, but people who could remember literally everything, or almost literally everything, and they just have useless facts come in when they're trying to recollect things. Like they'll remember what colour the wall was, and they're trying to remember, you know, how
do you shift through the important
yeah,
stuff?
Exactly. What about you? What about you, Arthur?
Me?
Slash Ben.
Whatever.
Arthur.
I don't know. Part of me, there's that childish part of you that wants an Iron Man suit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're back to exoskeletons, I
pretty much. But
would yours fly though?
It might be able to jump.
Jump. Okay. Yeah. How far?
Quite far. Maybe like
that's a very big maybe play.
maybe 10
a bit
10
more
to,
than normal.
Maybe 10 to 20% more than now.
But then you wouldn't be up there with like the Olympic athletes, would you?
It'd be fine.
Yeah. If you're paying like £1 million
for an
exoskeleton.
I don't
want
to draw too much attention to myself.
You're wearing an exoskeleton.
You just want to be able to leap over big puddles, basically, is what you're saying.
Is that not the dream of mankind?
As a big philosophical kind of philosophical point to make at the end there. But okay, so as we draw to the end, I've got a game for you guys to play. And it doesn't really have a snappy name.
Wait, you didn't say what you would enhance.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
We have to hear this.
I would enhance my radio presenting skills. And
how would you enhance your radio presenting skills? What are you changing about you to?
I'd make myself more charismatic and just etc. Yeah.
So, cocaine.
But to the game. Let's close with the game. It, like I say, it hasn't got a snappy title right now. So at the moment we're going to call it which of these things can cause, prevent, or both, or neither, cancer, according to the Daily Mail.
And we'll put some music in there.
I like it,
one day. Okay, so.
That could be a newspaper headline, couldn't it?
That could be. Although, you might need to abbreviate bits. Okay, so I've got five. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to present it to you both. And you both need to give an answer. Okay, when you both give an answer, I'll tell you if you're right. So you can think about this a bit. Okay, and what I will actually
do... But not too much, because it's radio and dead time, isn't it?
Exactly. If you're thinking, think aloud.
Okay.
And what I'll do is I will rack up points here. So I'm putting down a little score sheet. It's all high tech here. Right. So, first one. Light. Does that cause or prevent or both or neither cancer? According to the Daily Mail.
According to the Daily Mail, I'd say cause, because they mix it up with... isn't it UV? Is UV the same as light?
UV is, I'd say, it's light, a type of light.
Light's just a general term for photons. So yeah, UV is just on the broad.
I'm afraid I didn't check the wavelength when I was on this.
I imagine that wasn't on the Daily Mail page.
Probably not. No, that's true. I mean, I did check and it wasn't there. Are you saying cause?
Cause, huh?
Okay.
I'm going to say cause as well.
Cause as well?
Yeah.
You'll be surprised. As a chemist, I'm... According to the Daily Mail, light prevents cancer.
Brilliant.
So, tell your family. So that's zero so far. I won't write anything down. Right, next one.
We're all for that.
Next one. Aspirin. Does that cause, prevent, or both, or neither, cancer, according to the Daily Mail?
I just put this out there now. I don't think any of them are going to be neither, because that would be incredibly boring for Daily Mail.
True.
This doesn't cause or prevent cancer.
Or maybe next four are neither. Maybe I'm double bluffing or triple bluffing. What are you thinking?
I can't think on that level.
You can't.
Well, right. Aspirin has been shown, if you have one a day, it's been shown to have just health benefits across the board.
Okay.
So I'm going to say it causes cancer.
You're going to say it causes
cancer? Causes, even because, though it gives you health
because
benefits.
Because it's the Daily Mail. That's my thought process.
Okay.
I'm going to go both.
You're going to go it causes
both causes and prevents, depending on whether you read it in like 2008 or 2009.
That's true, that's the point. Well, we'll find that Isaac actually got it right there. According to the Daily Mail, aspirin both causes and prevents cancer. Okay, next one down.
I don't really want to win this quiz because it shows that I'm thinking on the same level as...
That's true. You don't want the certificate I've also got as well, then?
I might do. Depends on how attractive it looks.
Okay, next one. Fatty acids. And that's just in, you know, like lipids and all that fat. Acids.
Okay.
You're the chemist. Describe what a fatty acid is.
Okay, right. So what you have is you've got, you know, vinegar.
I know vinegar.
Yeah, you've basically got vinegar, but you've given vinegar a really long tail, and that's a fatty acid.
Okay, there we go. Vinegar with a tail.
Sounds pretty monstrous.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think vinegar with a tail causes or prevents?
It sounds
both,
like you'd find it in a bad fish and chips shop, wouldn't you? Like vinegar with a tail. Like, scurrying around.
You do find it in fish and chips.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Well done. Go on.
I'd say, according to the Daily Mail, I'd say it prevents.
Okay.
See, I don't know. I kind of want a four-sided dice. It causes it.
You think it causes?
I think it causes.
Isaac's right again. You've been reading the Daily Mail too much. I
basically whatever I think is correct, I'll swap it. Like because I think it does cause it.
Okay.
So, that's not based on anything. It just seems
you're giving up your tactics halfway through the game.
Oh, I shouldn't say that, should I? No.
Unless that was a bluff.
Yes, was a bluff.
Okay. Next one. Facebook. Cause. Prevent.
Definitely causes cancer.
You think it causes?
I would have to. I can definitely imagine the Daily Mail running.
It's an all-round cause, and that's both correct for you there. That's
Did they say how it causes cancer?
I didn't want to read
the whole thing.
I imagine the malicious intent of Mark Zuckerberg would be their reason.
Zuckerberg causes cancer. So at the moment, it's with one to go. You'll find that it's 3-1 to Isaac. So it's.
I'm feeling lucky.
I should really have had like a double pointer or something, or a tiebreaker. But here we go. Okay, so the last one is sex, and by that I mean not gender, but
intercourse.
I believe it's the action itself.
Okay.
So cause, prevent, both or neither.
There's
a great look of confusion over both their faces as I try to remember what it is. What is this?
It almost definitely reduces the risk because it makes you less stressed.
Okay.
And it's good exercise.
Yeah, normally.
For some people.
So we think because it's exercising and because it's de-stressing, you think it's going to prevent cancer?
I'm going to say neither.
Neither?
That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Because
okay.
This seems to be...
You don't think the Daily Mail has ever spoken about sex and cancer in the same article?
I'm definitely not going to go for neither because I think you made that category up just now or something. I don't think any of them, yeah. I don't think any of them are neither.
The category existed beforehand. It was an option.
Okay. I'm gonna go with both.
You're gonna go with both. It's correct. It's both. Well done. So that's in the first round of which of these causes prevents or neither or both cancer according to the Daily Mail.
Isaac is the winner.
Isaac is winner with 4 points to one. So that's good. You can I'll make you a certificate.
Thank you.
Somehow it might just be a bit of paper. With a note on it saying read better newspapers, but
yeah.
Well, it's been good. I think this has been a nice conversation between us three, and I hope everyone else liked it when they were listening, and I hope they tune in next fortnight as well, where it won't be us, but it'll be
Jess,
I believe.
I think they've got Jane Thomas Oates as a guest.
Do they? We'll find out. We'll
cut this out if this was drunk.
Yeah, it'll be a surprise, and we'll all be tuning in. And
I certainly will be. Yes,
and obviously the next issue of Spark is out soon as well, and the theme is misconceptions. So also pick that up. It'll be around campus, and it'll be free, obviously. And we're also online and on Twitter. So we'll have links to that as well. So thanks for joining me, you two.
Great.
And I hope you have a nice Sunday evening.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having us.